It's Friday, the 29th of January, 2021, day 5 of the Davos Agenda Week, and this is Radio Davos.
When it seems like it is lapping up against your front door, you just want to hope it's not too late.
We're seeing more walking the talk and not only rearranging the deck chairs on Titanic. We have learned that the impossible is also possible.
What happened in 2020 was that we leapfrogged at least 5 to 7 years in the digital advancement in the world. That is just unheard of.
Get involved, catch the buzz of this. This is going to be a really cool ride, and it's going to work. This is an educational forum where we get to be backstage at the world.
Hello and welcome to Radio Davos, where every day we've been bringing you a look ahead to some of the main events at the Davos Agenda Week. Later in the show, an interview with Robert Downey Jr. on how he's using his Hollywood star power to promote investment in green technologies, and how we need to understand climate change deniers rather than just dismiss them. You can follow the action of Day 5 live at wf.ch/Davos Agenda, where you can also catch up with the whole week's events and all editions of Radio Davos. I've been joined by a different co-host each day, and I'm delighted to welcome today's, all the way from Singapore, from the Straits Times, Singapore's flagship English language daily multimedia brand, its columnist and associate editor, Ravi Vellore. Hi, Ravi, how are you?
Good morning, Robin. I'm top of my game in Singapore, and it's very warm and balmy here, unlike what I assume is your condition over there in Davos.
Well, I'm not in Davos, I'm in Geneva, certainly not warm and balmy, but the other end of Switzerland from Davos, far less high altitude, and for now at least considerably less snow. Great to have you here on Radio Davos. Have you ever been to an actual Davos?
I've been 2 or 3 times. Well, aside from the fact that it's quite cold and you have to watch your step wherever you're going, It's always enervating to be there. Just the contacts, the people you meet, the people you bump into in a bus that drops you off at your hotel. I was once sitting next to the president of Nigeria in one of those buses. So you can imagine, Davos is about connectivity and being connected and being concerned about the world. And I'd like to think that's what I am too.
Talking of connectivity, let's have a brief listen to something that happened yesterday when we were talking about the fourth industrial revolution. Please see yesterday's Radio Davos for a proper definition of what that means exactly. But listen to this. As the developed and rich parts of the world march ahead with technologies that are rapidly changing all aspects of our lives, did you know that 3.6 billion people have no internet access? And even in developed countries, broadband services are too expensive for about half of the population. That's something the forum is seeking to address with the launch at the Davos Agenda of the Essential Digital Infrastructure and Services Network Alliance, also known as the Edison Alliance, which is something bringing industry and governments together to seek solutions. You can watch the discussion in a session called Accelerating Digital Inclusion in a Post-COVID World on the website wf.ch/Davos Agenda. It was on day 4. I'll just play you one clip from it. This is the chairman of the newly formed Edison Alliance, Verizon CEO Hans Vestberg, on the enormous importance of getting people connected.
What happened in 2020 was that we leapfrogged at least 5 to 7 years in the digital inclusion in the world, or the digital advancement in the world. That is just unheard of, because usually it takes a progression when you include it in the digital sort of transformation you're seeing. For the last 10 years, I've actually been talking about that mobility, broadband and the cloud is a 21st century's infrastructure. Because it's efficient, it's scalable, and it's sustainable. It has to be the most important platform we have in order to support the mankind on Earth. And we have seen how important it has been the last 5 to 7 years. And putting that in the perspective of the sustainable development goals, all of those goals are underpinned by the mobility, broadband, and cloud. And it has been seen more than ever.
Well, let's dive in and look at a session on day 5 called Resetting Geopolitics. In fact, 2 sessions, one at 12 Central European time for people following live in Asia. That one includes foreign ministers or other senior figures from the governments of China, Japan, Indonesia, Korea and Saudi Arabia. And then the second session at 4:15 in the afternoon, Central European time. That's with ministers from Qatar, Spain, Canada and Brazil. You can follow those live or on catch up at wef.ch/Davos Agenda. Ravi, let me start by playing you this from the World Economic Forum President Birger Brender. I asked him why geopolitics needed resetting.
Many of the biggest problems that we are faced with are global and can only be solved at the global level. But that cooperation is currently not happening at the level we would like. Look at the three C's: COVID, climate change, and cooperation. COVID doesn't know any kind of borders. COVID anywhere is COVID everywhere. Look at climate change. CO2 doesn't recognize any borders. So if we are going to really solve those two big challenges, we have to come together. We're all in the same boat and we have to find common solutions. And because of the impasses that we are seeing in a fractured geopolitical world, where nations don't deal with this in collaboration, we are not able to build resilience and solve the challenges. So what we hope during these two geopolitical panels is to get new momentum and have agreement on using the multilateral channels and cooperation to really address these pressing issues. The signals coming now from the new Biden administration is also showing that the U.S. is willing, as the largest economy in the world, to re-enter some of these tools. Paris Accord, U.S. is back, and President Biden also has now said that the U.S. is going to re-enter the WHO.
But resetting geopolitics, we had Klaus Schwab at the beginning of the week saying 2021 would be a crucial year for humanity. And I just have the feeling that there are going to be some big changes to geopolitics this year. What's your view on it, Ravi?
The big one, of course, is the U.S.-China relationship. It's tough at this point, so early in the days of the administration, to predict what's going to happen. You cannot expect too much of a change from the Trump policies towards China. It could be a matter of nuancing, but substantial differences are not going to be so easily worked out. And you must remember, Robin, that Joe Biden, as vice president to Obama, engaged then Vice President Xi Jinping in 2011 and 2012 repeatedly. And if you read the Obama book, which I did 2 weeks ago, and I was struck by how much importance that president gave his then Vice President Joe Biden. Joe Biden was in every council, every cabinet meeting. He had a voice. He had a say. It's a different matter that Obama may have not taken all his advice. But the fact is that he was there very much in the room. And this man who met Xi Jinping so many times would have carried back his own impressions to cabinet. And if he comes in to the Oval Office, as he has, with a sense that, hey, maybe all of us misread the man in Beijing. We need to be a little careful with this fellow. I think, the reset will be a long time coming. The overarching competition with China will probably sharpen, but will be probably conducted in more polite ways. But that's not to say that there is no scope for cooperation between the two superpowers. If you remember, the suspicion about China had grown substantially in the last years of the Clinton administration. George W. Bush came into office and, then 9/11 happened. And because of 9/11, that competition between the U.S. and China was thrust to the side for a while. The two actually cooperated on some global issues and got things going. Similarly, there is an opportunity now because it seems that COVID is not going to go away anytime soon, that these two people can work out a way to, try and work through this COVID problem. It's a common problem for humanity. So I'm not entirely ruling out, the possibility of improved relations. But at the moment, things do look a little fraught. You have to remember that when Joe Biden started politics, Russia was the big threat to the United States, not China. China was not even on the horizon at that point as any significant threat or potential rival. But today it is. But Joe carries some of that still inside him. There was this interview he gave to a U.S. TV channel where he listed the Russian threat ahead of the Chinese strategic rivalry as the number one challenge for his administration. I mean, for what he thought is the most important thing for the United States.
Well, from adversaries to allies, let's hear a clip from the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen speaking at a forum event shortly after the US election result.
We will have again a friend in the White House, and the tone will be different. So this is completely, I was about to say new, but it is something which we knew we had missed for a while, and now we are happy to have that back.
Ursula von der Leyen, and you can almost hear the relief in her voice there. She addressed the Davos agenda earlier this week, as did John Kerry. And let's just hear a little clip of him speaking, Ravi.
We rejoin the international climate effort with humility, and I mean that, and ambition. Humility because we know we've wasted 4 years in which we were inexcusably absent. But we re-enter with ambition, knowing that at the COP in Glasgow in November, all nations have to raise our sights together or we all fail together. Our goal in Glasgow is to see all major emitting countries together raise ambition, to not be content with goals 30 years from now, but to lay out roadmaps with benchmarks starting this year to acknowledge gaps where they exist, but to show how we get there. Because we need technology breakthroughs, and critically, we need to put forward real finance plans to bring the whole world along. Failure is obviously not an option.
We've heard from President Biden his intentions, but I guess also just events get in the way, don't they? I remember when President Obama was first elected, and I think he really coined this word reset, and that was in relation to US relations with Russia at the time, and he was really keen to reset relations with Moscow. And that never happened, as far as I can tell. So whatever the position of a president is at the start, it will be, you know, it's hostage to events, isn't it, as everything?
I would completely agree with you, Robin. You know, people start out with good intentions and then real politics comes into play.
So there are sessions today about harnessing emerging technologies in India, about Europe's green transition, about sustainable job-creating growth in Africa. Looking ahead to this year and the coming years, Ravi, where do you see the motors of economic global growth?
Robin, I'm thrilled to respond to that question that you put to me, because I'm sitting here in the heart of Asia, in the heart of Southeast Asia, which is Singapore. And, you know, this is the year that Asia's contribution to global GDP crosses the 50% mark. I mean, we are fully 50, half the world global economy. And this year, the projections are for 8% growth in China. You know, you're looking at a giant economy growing at 8%. It's a big, big boost to the world economy. Likewise, from everything I can see, the Indian economy also is poised for rebound with some evidence of herd immunity actually coming into view. Most of Southeast Asia should start recovering from the second half of the year. We're talking about a combined economy of $3 trillion down here in the ASEAN 10. But even more heartening is that integration is moving apace. You'd have read that the 15 nations that came together to sign the RCEP, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, that was signed in November. That's the 10 ASEAN nations, along with Australia, New Zealand, China, Japan, South Korea. Now that at some point is going to get operational this year, probably towards the end, after a majority of the countries have ratified it. There are very positive indications for the region. Hyundai, the Korean automaker, they have announced they're going to set up an electronic vehicle factory in tiny Singapore, and it's not for the home market. They're going to do it for the region.
You mentioned the economic agreement in Asia Pacific, of course, in Africa as well. At the start of this year, a free trade agreement within Africa has come in. So there are hopes there that that will help the economic recovery from the shock of the pandemic.
The thing about Africa, Robin, is that it really matters to the world because it is the future growth zone for the whole world. Once Asia is done, once the Americans and the Europeans are done developing, that is the region which is going to provide global growth. It's also a food bowl for the planet. At the same time, that region is very vulnerable. Just a 2-degree increase in temperature can take between 40% and 80% of the land out of cultivation and turn it into arid land. So Africa is important because it is an opportunity to develop without the environmental costs suffered by the West and Asia, particularly China and India. It's also an opportunity to leapfrog growth with new technologies that facilitate education, telemedicine, a whole range of stuff that can be done well and cleanly. So the world has a big stake in Africa, and I'm hoping to hear some very good speakers from the continent.
The one last thing I'd like to talk to you about is, can we get back to those levels of global economic growth in a sustainable way, in an environmentally sustainable way, at a time when the world has to slash emissions? Is that possible? This is World Economic Forum President Birger Brende again on the lessons he hopes we've learned from COVID that we can now apply to climate change.
We have learned that the impossible is also possible. Look at the vaccines that have been developed. Usually it takes 8 to 10 years to develop a vaccine. And in less than a year, there are many vaccines out there, and they're hopefully now working very well. And this is also because we have mobilized governments, but also private sector. A lot of the pharmaceuticals have put all their efforts into developing these vaccines. So I think in the future, we also will see more public-private cooperation to solve challenges. Look at also climate change. Companies are now leading in setting ambitious targets for being climate neutral in 2030 or 2050. We're seeing more walking the talk and not only rearranging the deck chairs on Titanic. I think it's really been a wake-up call. We see what happens if we don't act. And the cost of inaction far exceeds the cost of action when it comes to climate change.
Now, Ravi, what are your thoughts on climate change?
Robin, I could respond to that by just talking about China and talking about one CEO who's running a big renewable energy company called Envision Group. This guy used to be in London. He used to be with Barclays. He's an economist, studied at the London School of Economics, went back in 2006 to start up Envision. And I was talking to him over a couple of weeks ago, and he was heading to Inner Mongolia. And I said, hey, Lei, what are you doing in Inner Mongolia? And he said, look, that's the place of the future. I said, that sounds like a long way from home for you. He says, yes, but it's only 90 minutes by, speed rail from Beijing. And Inner Mongolia is where he thinks is going to be the future of manufacturing, because that's where the big wins are. I see the Chinese being able to crack it. They've announced that they're going to have a net zero target by 2060. They said they'll keep it. But you know what, Robin, I think they'll be there at least 5 to 10 years ahead of that. I'm convinced about it.
Climate change really has been front and center at this Davos, but there have been so many other issues discussed too over the 5 days. We talked early in the week on Radio Davos about companies embracing measures on racial equality. And in a session today, we'll hear about the growing moves by companies to do more about disability inclusion. The valuable 500 was established two Davoses ago to get disability action into the boardroom. Its founder and director, Caroline Casey, will announce today that 415 companies have signed up. This is action that should achieve fairer access to jobs for the 1.3 billion people who live with some form of disability, making them the largest minority group in the world. Here's Caroline Casey on how disabled people have historically been invisible in the boardroom, even when they're on the board.
We know that 54% of our global company boards have never had a conversation about disability. We know that even though 7% of our C-suite have a lived experience of disability, 4 out of 5 of them hiding it. In the years 2019 to 2020, only 3% of articles discussing corporate inclusion and diversity mentioned disability. Disability experience brings huge innovation to play, particularly in this digital time, this time of technological advancement. We forget that text messaging was designed for people who are hearing impaired, and it's used by all of us. We forget that remote control was designed for people who are visually impaired and blind to watch television.
Caroline Casey, who'll be speaking today in a session called Delivering Social Justice in the New Economy. You can follow it live at wf.ch/Davos Agenda at 6 p.m. Central European Time, noon in New York, or you can find it on Catch Up there, as you can find all of the week's events, and you can find all 5 episodes of Radio Davos at our website. You can also subscribe to our podcast. They're all at wf.ch/podcasts, and you can find this episode of Radio Davos on the Straits Times podcast channel on Apple, Spotify and Google, as well as on Singapore's Money FM 89.3 radio station. Before today's main interview, Ravi, I'd just like to say thank you to you for co-hosting with me, and I hope you enjoyed our look at the Davos agenda.
I sure did.
Now on Radio Davos, time for today's interview. He's Sherlock Holmes. He's Iron Man. At one point, he was even Charlie Chaplin. Now Robert Downey Jr. is using his Hollywood A-list superpowers to try to save the world for real. The actor-producer has launched an initiative to attract investment into sustainable technologies. In a chat with the forum's president, Borga Brenda, recorded by CNBC, the movie star admitted this wasn't his usual scene.
It's very odd to have woken up this morning. Usually say, what are you? Oh, I'm doing this big movie, or we're doing another Sherlock, or this or that. And you, yay. What are you doing? Well, I'm launching a fund at Davos, and I'm talking to y'all. This is an educational forum where we get to be backstage at the world. And there are major players who are, they are.
The Footprint Coalition has already put money into things like biodegradable plastics using consumer goods, carbon neutral protein for human and animal food derived from insects, and a brand of forest-friendly toilet paper called Cloud Paper, which is made of bamboo. And using his Hollywood contacts, Robert Downey Jr. is attracting creatives who could help tell the stories behind the big ideas, some of which you can see at the website footprintcoalition.com. In this interview, he explained his venture into green venture capitalism.
I'm here to accelerate groundbreaking technologies and that are addressing this existential crisis. And I want to open up access, the access that for some reason I have been fortunate enough to glean. I want you to feel that, and I want you to participate. I want to fast track everyone I can to be in the position that we get to occupy today, where we are in the conversation and we are moving the dialogue forward. Part of what we do is we generate content that builds a community and grows an audience, and then we can leverage that into getting eyes on deal flows that normally would be very exclusive. Say, for instance, we found a product like a better toilet paper, cloud paper. And we would generate content about that so people see, oh, they're telling a story about why, how this offsets carbon emissions and why it's better for us. And then that shows other companies or potential partners, they actually kind of know how to simply message what we're doing and really talking about the people behind it and the ideas, and then show that this can be brought to scale. And then if we're able to supercharge that with our venture fund, it just seems like I'm not just trying to go to Vegas and hit it. So I think part of this is removing that fear factor and saying we can create a better business model just by trying to not be exactly like what was before us while still taking the lessons from that. So we're getting a real interesting bunch of feedback points on how that seems to be working so far. So we're just going to keep heading down that road.
Robert Downey Jr. reflected on his role as Iron Man.
It's funny being able to play someone who needed technology to get themselves out of a cave where one of their own weapons had you know, given them shrapnel in their heart. I mean, I don't know what Stan Lee was thinking back in the 60s, but it was a bit of a time loop from the Vietnam era to kind of where we had found ourselves now. And I like studying deep on a subject. This happened to be genre filmmaking, but if you'd asked me, I was doing a biopic about a real person. So when that contract ran out, I had been asked to be a keynote speaker at the Remars convention, and I had done a series for YouTube on AI. And when we got back and people said, you know, more people watched the first episode of that or more listens or downloads, whatever you call it nowadays, than like Joe Rogan's biggest podcast. And I thought, oh, I think I'm supposed to lean into this. And then it's just been, again, when you're engaged and being stimulated by all of the possibility of something while having diligence and while being teachable, I just think that really the sky's the limit. Complacency sets in when it feels like there is not a next action item.
Robert Downey Jr. had this to say on the need for a rapid transition away from fossil fuels and the need to reach out to people, especially those in America, whose livelihoods depend on those activities.
You know, having occasionally fallen prey to the limousine liberal, we're just going to say, can you believe how we're destroying our planet? And rather than building the optimism, which is already part and parcel, as we know, to the emerging generation. Some of my thoughts also go to, well, what did these petrochemical companies, how do we assist them in transitioning out of what has been their infrastructure for half a century minimum into not just saying, well, you know, a revolution means that, you know, heads are going on the chopping block. It's like, so between there's problem solving to be done and how to do that peaceful transfer, literally, of energy and power and materials and food and ag tech and transportation and advanced engineering. As an American, I think about my brothers and sisters in the heartland and in the red states that their values must be addressed. They must be brought into the fold in a way that makes sense for their values.
And so what would he say to those people who deny that human-induced climate change is really happening?
I would say I can relate. You know, science is not always an exact science. And there is plenty of historical truisms to back that up. When what we thought it wasn't. Again, it's like, what's your felt sense of this? When the Malibu fires started ramping up in a way that was very out of sync with the three decades previous, you know, you kind of start going, And again, does the planet want to right itself? Yes, I have some belief in that Gaia principle that the Earth is a single organism. We can get as far out as you want. But when it seems like it is lapping up against your front door, you just want to hope it's not too late. Because if you can't catch up with the reality of something in time to quell it, that is a horrible place to be. So it's almost just the, and again, part of what we can do with this messaging is, I don't want to just preach to the choir. I really, really believe that some of the greatest problem-solving challenges are going to be, we have to not, they are not the other. We all need to come to a language that we can agree on and understand, and also something, again, like I said before, that makes sense to their value set. We have to see where they're right, not where they don't get it. And I really feel that if we can do that, it's going to make the job you know, 30 times easier. And I think that sense of novelty, rather than feeling like it's being preached at me and I already did something wrong, even though I haven't even, you know, read the paper today, it's that thing of get involved, catch the buzz of this. This is going to be a really cool ride and it's going to work.
Actor, producer, and now green entrepreneur Robert Downey Jr. speaking with World Economic Forum President Birger Brende. You can follow the Davos Agenda live and on catch-up at wf.ch/Davos Agenda, where you can also hear all episodes of Radio Davos, and you can subscribe to the podcast version on our Great Reset feed. Just search either for Radio Davos or for The Great Reset wherever you get your podcasts. Radio Davos has been a podcast from the World Economic Forum. It was written and presented by me, Robin Pomeroy, with additional reporting this week by Charlotte Beale, Anna Bruce Lockhart, Gail Markovitz, Jill Cassar, and Alex Court. Studio production was by Gareth Nolan. We'll be back soon with a podcast recap on some of the best moments of the Davos Agenda Week. To keep up with all our podcasts, please visit wf.ch/podcasts and join the club on Facebook. Just search World Economic Forum Podcast Club. For now, from me, Robin Pomeroy, thanks for listening and joining me at the World Economic Forum's Davos Agenda Week. And for now, goodbye.